Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by Ram Trucks. Guts, glory, Ram.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Somebody open the front door! Stevens Howling's coming in!
Oh, baby!
Wells runs over a defender, knocks his helmet off, and gets into the end zone for a touchdown.
From Cardinals headquarters in Tempe.
Adrian Wilson just ate his liver with fava beans and a fine Chianti.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Get your rear right back in the locker room.
All right, so I understand that I got ripped on these cyber airwaves a week ago. That's cool. You know the saying about podcasts.
No.
They don't build character. They reveal character.
Is that what the saying is?
That's what they say, effective immediately.
Paul, that was funny.
Darren Urban, Ron Wolfley, Jim Omohundro, we know who you are. More importantly, you know who you are, or lack thereof. We'll just leave it at that. It's sort of like that look on the face of Larry Fitzgerald. Didn't have to say anything. .. The look on his face sort of said it all. Darren, I imagine you were standing there among the media scrum after the seventh straight loss to St. Louis. And I know sort of the want and the tendency is to use Larry as sort of the metric, sort of the gauge, you know, how Larry feels sort of goes for the rest of the team. And why not? He's the face of the franchise. A lot of, you know, franchise players, you know, the same goes for them with different teams. But using Larry as that barometer, what sort of conclusion would you draw about where the Cardinals are right now?
Well, I mean, off the field, they're clearly on game days. There's a frustration which you would totally expect, and he's a barometer. He's never going to come right out and trash anyone or anything, but at the same time, he's willing to let his emotions show a little bit more on his sleeve, I think, than some because of his who he is and who he can be. And he can be honest about how they're not getting stuff done, which everybody knows. I mean, I don't even know if you need anybody to say that. On the field, he's also a good barometer because he's their best player, and he's been relatively ineffective because they haven't been able to get him the ball. I thought last week they were going to get him the ball a bunch, and he did get three catches on that very first drive, and I said, here we go, and shut out after that. And I think that's kind of a microcosm of where, especially offensively, this team is, you know, you have very short bursts of seeing what you want to see, but then long stretches of what you don't want to see. And obviously that's added up to a losing streak.
Just a sidebar question, Wolf. As a guy who spent 10 years in the NFL, and as you've mentioned more than once, you never had a winning season. And as a go-to interviewee in the locker room, how tough is that about 25 minutes after a game, where you put, you know, your heart and soul and everything on the line, you came up short, and then you got a dozen microphones stuffed into your nose wanting to comment on how you feel? How tough is that?
It is so difficult, Paulie. Look, it really is a bunker mentality. When you hear that, it's a cliche. People throw that out there all the time. You've got to get in the bunker, and you've got to be thick-skinned. But you really, really do, you know. And again, I think what really helped me in the 10 years that I played in the NFL was just the fact that I took the field. I realized that I didn't play on a very good football team. I realized that. And I took the field every time I walked in between those white lines, and I said, you know what? We might lose this game today, but I'm not going to lose today. I'm not going to lose today. I knew what my job was and what it was that I had to do in order for me to be successful. And hopefully, if I'm successful, my teammates around me will be successful because I am doing my job. Guys, you hear me talk about this all the time, but there is nothing I've ever said or ever will say about the game of football that is more true than that. You've got to make the game personal. You've got to go out and regardless of what the score is, what the down and distance is in the game, regardless of all of that, you can only control what you can control, and it's got to start with you. You have to resolve in your heart that today I am not going to lose, and hope that the guy next to you does the same thing. When you're in that bunker, believe me, it is a solo existence, to say the least.
As people know, we like to run the no huddle around here. So this is Cardinals Underground, by the way, on azcardinals.com. We are presented by Ram Trucks, Guts, Glory, Ram. We just thought we'd duck that in at the first TV media timeout. So, gentlemen, this team right now is a team that is struggling overall, or is it a team that is struggling at the quarterback position? Which one is it? And hence, it makes for a struggling team. You're a team that just lost by 14. The difference, dare I say, of two interceptions return four touchdowns. So is this team struggling, or is it a team struggling at quarterback right now, Darren Urban?
Wow, that's kind of existential there. You know, I think...
Not to go all Jean-Paul Sartre on you or anything, but we thought we'd throw that out.
Interesting.
I think it's a fair question to ask. You know, I think in the Rams game, I do think, while obviously the quarterback play was not what they needed, you can't throw four interceptions in a game and hope to win unless you're Matt Ryan. But, you know, I think... defensively, while those two pick sixes ultimately were the difference in the game, defensively, I think the Cardinals didn't do a couple things that they needed to do anyways. I mean, again, it was the same blueprint. They got beat by the Rams the first time, which was they only gave up eight completions to Sam Bradford, but once again, 37-yard touchdown pass, 37-yard touchdown pass, long throw to Danny Amendola for 38 yards. I mean, you when you're playing a team like that, you can't get burned by these long passes. Steven Jackson still had 139 yards rushing. I don't think you can lay everything at the foot of the quarterback. That said, clearly, by far, that is the number one issue this team is having. It's been the issue for most of the time. It will continue to be the issue heading into the offseason, trying to find that long-term consistent play at that position.
You know, what's amazing about this, too, even if you take away the two Ram games that the Cardinals have played here, week five, of course, and last week, even if you take those away, I do believe you could say with a conservative tone that if the Arizona Cardinals had solid quarterback play against the Buffalo Bills, they win that game. I think if they have solid quarterback play against the Minnesota Vikings, they win that game.
Ding.
If they have solid quarterback play against the Atlanta Falcons, they win that game.
Ding.
It would be so easy to sit here and say they could be 7-4. And I'm not even talking about the two Ram games either. It's the inconsistency at the quarterback position. That's not going to be breaking news to anybody. But it's the inconsistency at the quarterback position that has got this team in turmoil right now. I would say in the first half of the season, you could look at the offensive line as well and say, oh, my goodness, we all know about the problems the offensive line was having in the first half of the season. And I'm not going to say this is a great offensive line. I'm not saying that. But the one thing you can say over the last three games that they have played with Nate Potter as your left tackle, things have really quieted down in the trenches when it comes to the Cardinals and their protection. The problem is they have not been able to really run the ball. That's been spotty as well. They haven't been able to do that consistently enough, and they're going to have to do that against the New York Jets if they want to win this game, I believe.
And, Darren, you know, the point about the rushing yards, Steven Jackson, well taken. Here's my question. I don't know the exact breakdown, but I believe 98 of those yards came in the second half. And how many of those yards came after the second pick six? Or maybe even the second interception period by Dahl. And even though the Cardinals had a defensive stand there, right. And there was the missed field goal. Because as the sideline guy, I mean, it's just human nature. You get the second pick six, and it not only deflated the stands and they took the air out of the stadium, but on the sideline to some degree.
It was a turning point of the game easily.
And it impacts the defense mentally, psychologically. It just sort of removes some of their energy. And so I'd be curious how the rushing yards break down.
And I think that's a fair question. And not just because it was a pick six, but it was the way it happened. I mean, I think in any case it would have been deflating. But, I mean, we're not talking about some fantastic play by a defensive back. We're talking about the way it happened.
Talking about Larry Fitzgerald was open on those last two picks.
He was open. Ryan threw off his back foot. It was, I mean, to me, it's deflating not only because it's a pick six, but it's almost a demoralizing underscore of the problems you're having back there and that it probably isn't going to get better the rest of the afternoon. I think that's where it was. And, you know, again, I don't want to pile on Ryan Lindley. He's a six-round rookie.
Right.
And
in his debut, what were the real expectations?
And that's the thing. He almost got undercut himself by having that first drive.
I was going to say his first half was stunning.
Yeah.
I mean,
with a pick six,
with
it was stunning.
With a pick six, his first half was stunning. I'm sitting up there in the booth watching Ryan Lindley go 17 of 24 for almost 200 yards, and my mouth is just wide open. Stunned at what I was seeing, even though he threw a bad pick six The Rams were in cover two. Janoris Jenkins just rolled up. They had two safeties over the top. Larod Stevens-Holling breaking to the out route. The ball was behind him, and it was clear as day that that ball should never have been thrown because he knew he had cover two with a rolled up corner. He never saw that. That was a blatant misread, but he's a rookie. Again, he's a rookie. He's going to make those mistakes. His first half was brilliant.
Okay, so what changed? Is the book out? Whatever changed from the first half to the second half, is that what you can expect against the Jets for four quarters? What did the Rams do in that second half?
Yes, when you talk about Ryan Lindley as your quarterback, what happened was the Rams started blitzing. I thought they were going to blitz Ryan Lindley right off the bus. I thought, here they come. That's just Jeff Fisher's MO. That's who he is. If you've got an unproven quarterback or an inexperienced quarterback, he's going to come after you. I was surprised. Now, they did bring a couple of blitzes. They picked their spots in that first half. But in the second half, the big adjustment that the Rams made, and the Arizona Cardinals coaches staff, they knew what was going on. They knew all about it. And I'll give you an example, the microcosm, the second pick six here in a moment. But the Rams jammed up the box in rundown situation, and they started blitzing out of it. That was the big adjustment right there. They started coming after Ryan Lindley ad nauseum in the second half. And that was shown more than anything else on the second pick six to Janoris Jenkins. It was an eight-man front. The Cardinals were in regular people. They blitzed. They came after Ryan Lindley. It was picked up, and he had time. But he threw off his back foot, and the ball fluttered out of his hand. That right there was a microcosm of what happened in the second half.
All right, so you know our saying, other than don't trust your podcast partners when you have a media conflict, Pauly Pancake Makeup. Our other saying is it can always get worse. And it just did with the season-ending knee injury to Lyle Sendline. First, let's start with the fact that he suffered it somewhere early in the first quarter.
Yes.
And we all saw the doctors working on him, and I was looking over there, and the doctors had a little meeting, and I sort of looked over at the media representative and said, do we have an injury update on Lyle Sendline? And basically, he shook everyone off. He told the doctors, no, there is no injury update. I'm going back into the game. He finished the game, and he did so with, what, a torn MCL?
Torn medial collateral ligament in his left knee, which ends the season. And probably should have ended his day and didn't. I talked to Darren College about it, and I haven't had a chance to talk briefly with Lyle. I wasn't going to talk to him a lot about the injury. I don't think he was really in the mood to do that. But Darren College was like, look, you know, we all knew what that game meant to us as a team, and he was not going to be the guy who left that game for us. And I think that underscored a couple things. One, obviously, what that game meant to the Cardinals. If anybody was wondering if the players cared or knew what was going on, they most certainly did. They understand what happened with that loss. But it also obviously underscores the toughness of Lyle Sendline. I think it's going to hurt them deeply. I think he's been the bedrock of an offensive line that's obviously taken a lot of shots. Some of them very much deserved, but they've come around a little bit of late. They need him in there as both a leader off the field and on the field with what he does. And I think this is going to be rough. And to be going on the road to New York, that's tough. I mean, the only thing that I think the Cardinals have going for them in that regard, in terms of being a road game, is I'm reading. I just read a story by one of the Jets writers imploring all the fans to not go to the game this weekend, to send a message to ownership because the Jets are doing so bad. And hopefully maybe the stands will be half empty and nobody will care for the Jets, and that'll help out this team because I don't want to think about a Rex Ryan blitz happy defense with a loud crowd against a rookie quarterback and a first-time starting center in Rich Ornberger.
And you're using the silent count. Yeah, that's a recipe for disaster. Well, maybe the fans don't show up. You know, Fireman Ed has already checked out. You know, he's Q-U-I-T on the J-E-T-S. So, you know, I mean, maybe there won't be as many chants going around the stadium. But, Wolf, let's not underestimate what Lyle Sendline does. As Darren said, not only the game he plays, but the position he plays and all the calls he makes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a massive blow to this offensive line, an offensive line that has struggled, as we all know, and an offensive line that has two rookies starting at right tackle, left tackle, an offensive line that has been under fire from the beginning of the season. And as Darren said, Lyle Sendline was the one guy that I think was very, very very steady through it all and gets everyone else lined up on the same page. He makes all of the calls there. The one thing I will say about Rich Ohrenberger is he did play center in the preseason.
Yes, he did.
He is a guy that is very capable. He is a guy that is very, very intelligent, very bright. I think he's going to be okay when it comes to making the calls on the offensive line. But again, if you're talking about the silent count and the reps, and you're talking about, you know, just blocking from a center position after snapping the ball, it's completely different, a completely different dynamic, of course, than going in there and filling in at guard as he has done this season. But the last thing I want to say is this in regard to Lyle Sundlein and the fact that he finished this game with a torn MCL. From one former player to an active player, stuff of legend. That's all I'm going to say. To actually finish a game with a torn MCL. Got no MCL. Oh, okay, good. You know how many guys would have come out of that game? Do you know how many guys knew there was something? Lyle Sundlein had to know there was something really, really wrong with my knee. And oh, by the way, man, does it hurt. And the fact that he got through that game, almost three quarters of that game, with a torn MCL, stuff of legend.
2 years ago, we learned at the end of the season he had a massive shoulder injury, right?
2008 season, he played.
His rookie
in fact, in a bit of coincidence, he had suffered that shoulder torn labrum against the Jets the last time this team went to New York.
Wow.
That famous Anquan Boldin breaks his jaw game.
Torn labrum,
and didn't miss any time. Played the whole season.
Wow.
All through the Super Bowl.
Wow.
So,
amazing.
Speaking of linemen and injuries, Calais Campbell, what do we expect, Aaron? What's the latest there?
Well, the expectation is that he will be back this weekend, which, you know, I guess this team needs a little bit of good news, and to have Calais back in there would be good. I think he was probably close last week, but they probably wanted to be careful, and David Carter had done a nice job the week before. So, you know, to have Calais back in there would be a big deal. Coach Ken Wisenhunt kind of implied that Todd Heap might actually be active this week. There's kind of an unknown over exactly why he was inactive last week. I mean, we all assumed he was a healthy scratch. He practiced full the entire week and was listed as probable heading into the Rams game, and then was inactive. And then when Coach was asked about it on Monday, whether he was basically a healthy scratch, he jumped in, well, we think he's finally ready to play. Didn't quite answer it directly. You know, I still wonder if it sounds like he probably could have played last week had they wanted to, but, you know, Wisenhunt had said the week before, it will depend on what we do on game days or whether Todd Heap will play. And it is noteworthy that on the official depth chart, finally, Rob Housler was finally moved ahead of Todd Heap. So it goes officially Jeff King, Rob Housler, Todd Heap. So that kind of explains where he stands right now.
Well, we talked about Ryan Lindley and his propensity to hit the seam, right? And that materialized with Rob Housler. He had a career game.
Yeah, off of play action. And look, we're talking about Lyle Sundlein here. And, you know, we know that Beanie Wells made his return. The reason why all this is important, that Beanie Wells is right and that Rich Ohrenberger is able to come in and play well, is because I think the Cardinals are going to have to run the ball.
Yes.
And run the ball well against the Jets if they're going to have any chance of winning this game. And one of the reasons being, of course, the New York Jets are number 30 in the National Football League. They're giving up over 140 yards rushing per game. They're giving up 4.4 yards per carry. That's number 22 in the National Football League. Now, look, there are some mitigating factors here. Number one, they know, the opponents of the Jets know, that Mark Sanchez in the New York Jets offense is struggling mightily, and they've played against teams that have leads on them. That's why they run the ball. But even when they are running the ball, you have to understand they're gaining yards when they run the ball, and play action is going to be huge. To your point about Rob Housler and Ryan Lindley throwing the ball down the seam and attacking those seams, throwing the ball down the seam off of play action is brilliant, and it works a lot. Down the seam, not only down the seam, but also on the dig route, the deep in route as well. Why? Because those backers in the middle suck up. They have to honor the play action. And anytime you got Beanie Wells back there, that is really going to help you. So we'll see how it goes for the Cardinals, but this is an opportunity an opportunity to be able to get back on the page, and the page that was so critical to the Cardinals winning games early in the season, that was a balanced attack, and it all starts with the ability to run the ball, in my opinion.
Well, last we saw the Jets, and the whole nation saw the Jets on Thanksgiving night. They were Joe Namath struggling with three G's in there. I mean, 35 points allowed in the second quarter, the Patriots. And then the headline the next morning, the back pages was butt ugly, quote, end quote, after Sanchez ran into the rear end of his lineman and knocked himself out almost and gave up the football.
He had to have his eyes shut on that play, by the way.
How does
there
that was, happen?
There's no other way you can explain. He had to have had his eyes shut.
So if you can jump out, once again, keys to the game, if you can jump out to a big lead, not only do you take the crowd out of the game, I think the crowd turns on the Jets at this point. I think it gets ugly.
I would totally agree with you. I mean, I would think if we're going to look at one game at a time and this week only and the Cardinals are where they are already, you can't pick a better opponent to play right now, especially if you have to go on the road. I mean, this is what you'd want. And I think in some ways it's a little scary. Because if you're the Cardinals, you need to perform well because there's no reason why you shouldn't. And if you don't, you know, I mean, obviously, things aren't good anyways.
This is really going to be a tough matchup, too, for the New York Jets, I think, offensively, because they are trying to run the ball more. They're trying to get Sean Green going. They're trying to pound the football a little bit. And if there is an Achilles heel with Ray Horton's defense, as we all saw last week, it's the ability to run the football. Why in the world the Atlanta Falcons didn't try to do that more, I have no idea. But every other team in this losing streak, including the St. Louis Rams twice, have tried to establish we're going to be a run-first team, and then we're going to use the power of play action, to Darren's point earlier in this podcast, to hit big plays down the field. Why the Falcons didn't do that, I do not know, but it's going to be a difficult matchup for the Jets because they have so much trouble throwing the ball and throwing it efficiently. They just cannot seem to get any type of passing attack going. So you know they're going to rely heavily on the run, and we might see Tim Tebow with a little wildcat. We might see a lot more of that. It's going to be interesting to see how Ray Horton adjusts to a rare situation where you've got an offensive football team that really struggles to throw the ball. If you want to talk about the strength of the Cardinals' defense, it is their passing defense.
Yes.
Their ability to rush the passer, get pressure on the passer, and their ability to defend the pass. That is the strength of this team. Can the New York Jets get a running game going enough where they can use play action and maybe hit some big plays down the field? And what will Ray Horton do? These are the questions I have going into this weekend.
I mean, is there a team in the NFL that is less talented a receiver right now than the New York Jets?
And those receivers are hurt. I mean, I'm not even talking about the ones, the Santonio Holmes of the world. I mean, the guys that they've had playing Curly and those kind
Jazz
of guys,
Shillings.
They're banged up right now. I mean, this is in terms of wide receiver injuries and getting to the end of the roster. I mean, this is a 2002 Arizona Cardinals type of injury at the end of the, you know, when you know Jake Soliday was playing for this team. So I mean, there's no question if you can stop the Jets running the ball, you've got a good chance to at least slow them down. Now the Cardinals have to prove they can score some points. Otherwise, it's going to be 6-3, but we'll see.
Darren flexing some Cardinals knowledge there with the Jake Soliday reference. That was extra bonus points.
Nathan,
you know, I think he pulled ahead of you, Wolf, in the final tally there with those bonus points at the end, that last point and name reference.
Only other thing I'm going to say, Rex Ryan, you know Rex Ryan. You know what he's all about. He's about machismo. He's about bravado. He's going to come after Ryan Lindley. I think when you look at he's just going to look at the Rams film. He's going to look at the Rams tape and say, okay, they didn't blitz him in the first half, and he was 17 to 24. The kid, the protection held up, and the kid was able to read coverage and throw the ball. And then they started coming after him with 5-6 and cover zero blitzes in the second half. And the kid fell apart. And I think that probably is what is going to happen on Sunday, but I expect to see that in the first half.
All right, if you guys would leave the executive conference room now, I'm going to have a few bad things to say about you and payback for last week. Just I'm going to take your names
that's,
and
that's
name.
What happens when you don't show up.
There you go. Okay. Presented by Ram Trucks, as always, Cardinals Underground. Ram Trucks, Guts Glory Ram. For Darren Urban and Ron Wolfley, Jim Omahunter, I'm Paul Calvisi on azcardinals.com. Snack time.
Wake up, got another day to get through now. Got another man to see. Got a call on the telephone. Well, got a time for some paper. Sit down, got another letter to write. Think hard, got a little letter to write. Gonna bring it on the telephone.